Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and on today's episode, we talk to an ultra runner who started running over 20 years ago in middle school, but because of a delivery job at Jimmy John's, actually ended up getting away from running for a while and dove headfirst into the biking world. After bike racing for a year, he decided he wanted to tackle the challenge of completing his first marathon. From there, we get into how this road eventually led to ultras and how the mental toughness aspect of running in ultras, where the change can really happen in yourself. Let's go ahead and jump right into the episode. Please welcome Cass. Cass, thank you so much for spending some time with us this weekend. I'm excited to have you on the show. How's your weekend going so far?
Well, thanks for having me, Taylor. I'm excited to be here. Just got back from volunteering at the Humane Society. We kind of do that every Saturday. So it's a nice little way to start your weekend and kind of just preparing for this, getting excited to talk to you about running.
Awesome. I'm excited. Yeah, that is a great way to start the weekend, hanging out with some dogs and some animals.
Yep,
puts you in the right mood.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to hear about your journey. We were just chatting about it a little bit. You've been running for quite a long time. You said that this started in middle school. So if you want to kind of just touch on where running started from you in the first place, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I think seventh grade, I joined the track team. And really before that, even I was big into like auto racing. My family loves, you know, all things auto racing. And so I grew up racing go-karts. So I've always kind of had that racing mentality. That's only kind of the summer that any of that racing is happening. So throughout the rest of the year, I was always doing like soccer or basketball. In middle school, I decided to join track. And I could run like a 5:30 mile in middle school, and that was really good for the area. So that really got the attention of the high school coaches, and they encouraged me to kind of join the cross country team my freshman year, and did that and kind of made the varsity squad, and got to do that for a while and kind of build up from there, and then ran all through high school, ended up being like an all-state cross country runner, but then never made state and track. So that's kind of where I started learning, okay, the long distances are kind of where I'm going to be the best at. And so I knew probably when I was like 15 or 16 years old that I would eventually be running marathons. So I did that in high school, kind of just dedicated to the track and cross country, and the go-kart racing kind of took a side seat to that because I was doing so well in running, and then ended up going to Boise State to run. It was a Division I program, so that was kind of where my eyes were set on that, and it was in the mountains, and it was a team where I felt like I could join or be on the traveling squad and kind of get to do some serious racing. And so I, you know, went to Boise State, had a really good freshman year of cross country there, and then got an Achilles injury. And so had to spend some time out, got tendonitis. From there, you know, I spent so much of my high school kind of being dedicated to running and like really in that focused fixed rate. And once that was my first big injury was my freshman year of college. Got to experience college a little bit more because I was kind of sitting on the side and kind of had that moment in life where you just want to go experience things. My junior and senior year of college, I kind of started getting away from running, and was really focused on just, you know, being a college kid, and got a part-time job as Jimmy John's as a delivery biker for Jimmy John's and the downtown Boise Jimmy John's. For any listeners that have ever been there, it's like being in a beehive. Like there's just so much going on during the lunch delivery shift, and there's just like five or six delivery drivers kind of going in and out, and that kind of is a competition among the delivery drivers themselves. And so I kind of fell in love with cycling and like the competition of, you know, being the fastest bike delivery guy in the area. And so did that for, you know, the rest of my college, did that, and then moved to Tracktown, USA, Eugene, Oregon, after school. And ironically enough, got into cycling hardcore while I was here, not running, and did some bike racing for quite a few years. Kind of made my way through the ranks. There's kind of categories in bike racing. You start as a category five racer and kind of work your way up to a category one or a pro racer. And so there was the fun challenge of trying to, you know, build into those fastest categories. And there's a lot of different varieties of bike racing. I started in road cycling, and then kind of fell in love with cyclocross, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but
I'm not. Yeah,
I recommend anyone who's never watched a cyclocross race hop on YouTube. It's probably the most entertaining form of human powered racing there is. Like, you're riding on basically a road bike with like little knobby tires on it, and riding through the mud and all these tight turns, and you have to hop off and like carry your bike over obstacles.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so it's a super fun form of racing, and so I got really into that and did that for quite a few years, and that kind of filled most of my time. And after one summer of bike racing, it was just kind of, you know, I had a good feel of bike racing. I raced a lot that summer and was kind of just looking to do something different. And on a whim, that's kind of when I decided to do my first marathon and just kind of see, like, I'm in such good shape from all this bike racing. Like, what could I do if I just like hopped into a marathon? And so that's when I did the Portland Marathon. That was 2016, in the fall. And that kind of reignited my love for running again when I spent maybe like a month and a half kind of just getting my running legs back before going into that. And just really since then, the last 8 years or whatever, I've kind of been refocused on running. And here and there, I'll do like some multi-sport stuff, like the running and biking. I did a couple sprint triathlons and stuff like that.
Cool.
But really now it's all the running again, and now kind of dabbling in ultra marathons. So I've really been enjoying that. And the trails are a totally different beast than the road. And so that's a fun thing to kind of challenge yourself and tackle.
For sure. Yeah. So cool. So you started out running, you fell away from running and fell in love with biking, then you found your way back. I think that's a unique way to dive back into the marathon, but very cool. I have so many questions about biking. I'll try to keep them to a few, because I know this podcast is focused around running, but I haven't talked to somebody that's in that world. So how similar is it in terms of like schedule and how you're prioritizing your life and things like that for training for like a bike race to training for a running race?
One of the things that got me back into running actually was the time that you have to commit to bike riding.
Sure.
I'm sure there's an actual study and science behind what the equivalent is, like running to biking, but I always kind of felt like if I wanted to, the equivalent of a 1 hour run would be like a 3 hour bike ride.
Mm.
And so my training for running when I was, or for biking when I was like really training hard, I was usually doing like 13 to 15 hours of riding my bike each week, doing like back-to-back 100-mile rides on the weekends. So that's like 10 hours just on the weekend of riding sometimes.
Wow.
And yeah, it's really time consuming. But you can see, so that was the major appeal to me, is you can just go so much further and see so many more things. And there's kind of a unique culture to biking, like running with the running community, but in cycling, you know, if you're going for a long ride, you're the people you're riding with, you kind of have to work together, to get through those rides. And so that's kind of a cool aspect that You see a little bit in running, like pushing each other, but it's like so much more dependent on each other in a bike ride. So it's kind of cool that way.
Yeah, that's cool. I think all of these like sub communities in these different worlds are always so interesting of how people connect with each other and how they use each other to be successful, like you said. I think it's really interesting. But that's really time consuming. So that were you thinking about the marathon? I mean, I don't think anyone ever thinks is the marathon is something not time consuming, but were you thinking, gosh, this might breathe some time back into my life? 'Cause 10 hours on a weekend is a lot.
Yeah, no, that was definitely the first thing I noticed is, wow, I don't have to go out for 3 hours this
Right.
afternoon. I can just do like 45 minutes to an hour and, push myself pretty hard for certain parts of the run and like feel good about it, and feel like I'm still, keeping really strong fitness. So, it was definitely a breath of fresh air in that regards. And you're a little more motivated then to kind of do this stuff outside of the actual, physical activity, the stretching and the
Sure.
rolling out and all the rehab stuff. And as I've gotten older and that becomes more important, it definitely is what has kept me kind of staying with running recently as opposed to going out on those long bike rides.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. Cool. So you said you gave yourself like a month and a half, I think you said, for to like base build, get your legs back into running again. And then how long did you give yourself after that point to train for the actual race, if you remember?
Yeah, so I think I started maybe in, the race was in October. I started thinking about it probably, early to mid August, kind of as the bike racing season was kind of coming to a close. And when I first started, really running training, I would still kind of here and there go for a run just for the fun of it while I was doing the bike racing. But once I really started training, it became getting your legs used to that again. There's so much more impact, and you're using slightly different muscle groups and stuff like that. So, the first couple of weeks were just kind of getting my legs under me, and then once that started feeling good, and I already had the aerobic fitness, like I could run, or I felt like I could run a lot longer than my legs would actually let me run. And so it was kind of building my legs back up to that. And then really starting to try and do some solid long runs and some solid like progression tempos and kind of stuff like that to really get the speed up and feel like I could last a marathon.
Sure.
Because yeah, my longest run in college I think was always only like 16 or 17 miles maybe. We didn't really keep our miles that close in college. It was more like time based for our long run. So it was probably in that like 17 mile range. And so it was a pretty big step up to kind of tackle a marathon. And so really just wanted to make sure that I was going to be able to hang on and be able to run that far.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm sure like every training block, there was probably highs and lows. There's always going to be that run that feels awesome. And then the run that probably the very next week that doesn't feel great at all. So if
Yeah,
you remember,
definitely.
did you have any memorable kind of high and low points for that first training block back to running a marathon?
I'd say the moment I felt like, yeah, I'm going to do this and it's probably going to be like a pretty decent marathon, is I had this kind of 5 mile loop mapped out and I wanted to do repeats on the 5 mile, like tempo repeats on the 5 mile loop. So I did like one loop, and then took like a 5 minute rest, and then another loop, and then the 5 minute rest, and then the final loop. And I was able to kind of get progressively faster all the way through, for the cumulative 15 mile tempo. And so when I hit that workout, I was like, okay, I'm pretty fit, and I can handle this. I just need to hang on, for about 10 more miles. And so that kind of gave me my confidence that it was all going to work out pretty well.
Yeah, there's always that run that you're like, okay, all right, this is obtainable. I can do this thing. Cool. And then what do you remember what your peak mileage was when you did that plan? Was it like a 20 mile run, 22?
Yeah, I think my longest run I did a 23 miler.
Okay.
And started kind of slower and progressed faster throughout the run, and tried to keep it just more flat. Like these days training for ultra marathons, I'm all about trying to get as many vertical feet as possible. Whereas like when I was really focused on the marathon, it was, you know, you wanted to keep it kind of flatter so you could really go at a good pace. And so I was, did like a nice 23 mile loop, and that went really well. And, you know, 23 to 26 isn't too crazy of a jump. So I felt like that was a good preparation. And when leading up to that, you were doing like 100 mile bike rides all the time, like 23-26 miles didn't feel like such a stretch.
Sure.
Yeah. The legs kind of feel it differently, than you would like a 100 mile bike ride, but, the time, where you're pushing yourself hard, that's really where I felt like my biking experience paid off the most, is I was used to pushing really hard for really long extended periods of time. So, I'd say that was made me better suited than even if I probably just went into it from straight running, and never had that bike experience. I think the daunting, aspect of the 26 miles, for any runner, kind of plays a mental game with you. But when you've broken that by all that bike racing on those long, hard days, it really kind of took that out the window and made it more about like getting the legs ready. And so it was kind of a unique approach in that aspect, because I didn't have to really worry about the distance so much as just the effort.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so you kind of had the I feel like a lot of times we on this show, especially when we talk about first marathons, it's the mental aspect that really freaks you out leading up to race day, like you just said. So having that not be so unknown for you, I'm sure helped a ton.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And there was definitely some bad days in bike racing. You know, if you get dropped from the peloton, which is like the big group of bikers all riding together, mm-hmm. and you're drafting off each other. When you're in there, you're going like 25 miles an hour and you barely have to pedal because you're all drafting off each other. And so, but if you start falling off that group and you're kind of dangling off the back, it becomes really, really hard to maintain that 25 miles an hour. And if you lose the group, then you're riding 30 to 40 miles to the finish line on your own. And so when that kind of happens to you and you're just dogging it for a couple hours at the end of the race, like you build some mental fortitude for sure.
For sure. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it seems like there's a lot of parallels for sure. I mean, there's obvious differences, but it seems like what anything that you would do in the biking world is going to prepare you for running, and probably vice versa too. But it sounds like you did it the right way, doing the longer distances and then and then going into the marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, I at least knew how to train running wise going into it from my college and high school background. I at least knew how to make a training plan that was going to work and like progressively building into it versus just kind of jumping in. So
for sure.
Yeah, definitely had to pull from that.
Cool. So I imagine you were feeling pretty good leading up to race day. You had your taper, I imagine, for a couple of weeks, and then we were getting closer. Were you living in Eugene at the time, you said?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. So you had like a 2-hour commute or so to get to the race. Yeah, were you gonna go stay up in Portland for the race?
Yeah, my parents, I grew up in Wisconsin, so my parents are still in Wisconsin. And they came out to, you know, watch me do my first marathon, and we rented a cool little Airbnb in the Forest Park area.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Portland, but yeah, it was basically overseeing a portion of the race course, which was kind of cool, and got to just kind of stay the night with them up there, and then just got ready first thing in the morning. And it was raining, of course.
Oregon.
True to Oregon.
Yep.
So it was a cold, rainy morning, and didn't do too much of a warm up because I felt like I wanted to start a little bit slower and ease myself into it. And so I I just kind of got to the start line, did a couple little, you know, shakeout movements and strides and stuff like that, and some stretching, and was all bundled up and trying to stay warm. And then once it was like 5 minutes to go, just got to the start line and got ready to go.
And the Portland Marathon's pretty big, yeah. I'm familiar with the Eugene Marathon, but Portland I'm not as familiar with. I would imagine it'd be pretty big.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact count of who was there, but I'd say it was, at that time at least, it was definitely on par with the Eugene Marathon as far as the number of entrants. And so it was a pretty good size field that went. And it was, as far as like competitiveness, it wasn't like on the level of like a Chicago or New York City or anything like that. The, you know, the top guys were still running pretty fast.
For sure.
So there's, you know, that the people that just take off at the start line and you're kind of trying to find your pace. And so that's why I told myself to kind of start a little bit back and ease into it a little bit, so I didn't get caught up in that too much. Because I've just, that's always been my biggest issue, is I've got that racing instinct. I really want to like be at the front, and I knew I couldn't hang with the top guys. So I wanted to kind of start more in the middle and work my way into it, and make it more about my race than being in a race.
For sure. Yeah, for your first one, I think that's important, because it's even though you have the background that you have, it's all pretty unknown. And I think you can get excited in the race environment and really kind of push yourself in the beginning too much. So that makes sense. And did you have any other goals besides like starting slow, obviously, is a goal? Did you have any time goals or any other things that you were focusing on throughout the race for that one?
I did want to hit the Boston qualifier. That was my big goal. And I think at that time it was like 3:05 or something for my age group.
Cool.
And so that was like right around 7 minute pace. So really wanted to kind of stay under that, was my goal. And just once I really got into the race, like just finished strong. That was probably the biggest thing in my head, is I didn't want to experience that death march that I knew could potentially happen. So I just wanted to execute, I guess, was the main thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I talked about it on the show before, but somebody on my first marathon gave me the best advice. It was like, it's your first marathon, you're going to PR no matter what. So you might as well just go out there and make it your race, because you're starting from, you know, your starting point. So just having the goals of finishing and being okay with the kind of A, but B and C goals as well is super important for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, let's break down the race. I'm excited to hear about it. Let's maybe break it up in a couple pieces. So how was the first, say, like half marathon for you in that race?
Sure. So yeah, the first 5K or so, I kind of started maybe a few rows back to make sure that the faster guys kind of went off and I didn't get lured into that too much. And kind of eased into my pace. The Portland Marathon course has some hills. I wouldn't say it's like as crazy as Boston, but it definitely has some hills that you got to navigate throughout the race. And so in the first 5K, there was a pretty good hill. And I don't know, I feel like it's a pretty common issue among most distance athletes, is you overhydrate a little bit in the beginning. So there was a nice little porta potty set up at the top of that hill. And I made sure to take a pit stop. I was feeling it. So getting that kind of out of the way kind of loosened me up a little bit. And so from there, we kind of weaved through town a little bit and started getting into a comfortable pace. For me at that time, it was kind of in that like 6:15 mile range. So I was starting to click off some consistent miles. And after you get out of town, there's just this long, kind of daunting stretch to the St. John's part of Portland, and you go over the St. John's Bridge, which was kind of the next big hill to come up. And so there was maybe like 5 miles or so on this stretch of just flat open road. I think it was like maybe a 6-lane road that they had blocked off. So it was very open. There weren't a lot of spectators out there. It was dumping rain. So that was really the place you had to mentally just kind of start pushing. And I luckily had this guy who was running kind of right with me. We kind of just pushed each other and talked to each other for a little bit. And we're starting to click off some pretty good miles, and felt really good about that. And then we kind of hit the St. John's Bridge, which I can't remember the mileage specifically, but I want to say that was probably right around halfway, or like maybe the 15 or 16 mile mark, kind of right around there. And so that's when I started to feel like, okay, this was going to be a decent day. We're clicking off good miles. I feel good. Was feeling pretty good about where I was in the race at that time too. It was pretty spread out by that point. So you kind of had to find a little dot of someone up ahead, or find someone that you could run next to for a while. And just from there kind of started clicking. And then we got kind of into the bigger hills of the race. There was St. John's Bridge, and then kind of went through St. John's area a little bit, and kind of over, I think it was the Adidas campus area. And there was like kind of some hills around there a little bit, and then another couple bridges. And so that's when you really kind of had to push a little bit, and your rhythm was disrupted a little bit. And there were a few guys that looked like they were kind of in the elite category of runners, and they were starting to come back to me. So I started feeling a little too confident maybe, and started pushing pretty hard. And so then mile like 18 and 19 is when that caught up with me a little bit. And I was really, really starting to hurt, really starting to feel the marathon, really just trying to hang on. I've kind of found this in all my distance races that I've done so far. Like, I have that middle point that really becomes a struggle. And then the last 5K or so, you can just kind of think, okay, we're almost there. And so you just kind of get this second wind. And so I was able to finish pretty strong. And when you get back into town or into the downtown area and the crowd comes back, you've been kind of secluded or seeing spectators here and there. Once you get back into the big crowd, you get this jolt of life, and the last mile or two, was really able to finish pretty strong. And had a pretty good day and got that Boston qualifier. So I was pretty stoked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like everything went pretty well. When you were starting to feel pain, was it like more like cramping type of pain, or was it just fatigue? What do you think?
There was some definitely mostly fatigue. There were a couple downhill sections where the hamstrings started to feel like they were going to cramp up. And so I was fighting that a little bit, trying to keep a pace going without taking that one step that just locks you up. So I was kind of trying to find that balancing act a little bit, where you're not slowing down too much, but you got to kind of let your body get right again. That was definitely the hard part of the race for sure, where it started looking grim for a moment.
But we pushed through it. And I think, like you said, a lot of that mental battles you went through with cycling probably helped you a ton pulling through something like that. But it sounds like everything went really well. So that's awesome. I love that first marathon story. And then you said kind of from there, that was where your mindset shifted from biking to, okay, I'm going to dive back into this running world. So what was the aftermath of the marathon like for you? What kind of led to that conclusion?
Like I said, the marathon went pretty well. I got that Boston qualifier. So the goal was then to run Boston. That just never kind of ended up working out due to just work obligations and the training, the way training kind of lined up. I had a couple little niggles after the Portland Marathon, so it took a while to kind of get back to feeling good again. And so with knowing Boston kind of wasn't going to be on the horizon, I wanted to run another marathon. Because you run one and you get the itch and you're like, I bet I could be faster. You know, that felt too good.
Yeah, never ending.
So I think it was the following spring, signed up for the Eugene Marathon. And so had a much more normal running build up to that, and I wanted to see kind of what I could do, with an actual run, like solid running block going into that versus just kind of on a whim deciding, a month and a half out that I was going to do it. And so that one was much more, like ran a 10K race, ran a half marathon, a couple of 15Ks and stuff like that to kind of get the build up right. And then went in and did the Eugene Marathon. And then from there, it was fully committed back to running. And once I had done a couple marathons, I was like, well, what else is out there? And Eugene has tons of beautiful trail systems, both in town and out. Just like a half an hour drive away, you can be running up a mountain. And so really fell in love with doing my long runs on the trails and doing all that trail running. So ultra marathons kind of became the obvious step after that. And so I've done a couple ultras recently, within the last like 3 or 4 years, kind of gone that route.
Cool. Yeah, and when you said that you were doing a more, I guess, traditional build for Eugene, when you wanted to give yourself a shot to train the way that you wanted to train for that, you said you put together your own training plan. Do you mind kind of talking about what typically your thought process is when you put together a plan like that?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
My kind of go-to weekly format is doing a long run on the weekends, either Saturday or Sunday, having some sort of like longer workout. For the marathon, it was usually like a 30-minute or 40-minute progressive tempo where you are starting at a pretty comfortable pace and trying to work down into just under race pace. And then usually just like a little short fast workout to kind of feel fast at some point throughout the week, and everything else is kind of just like easy runs. And when you're working full time, it's hard to kind of get in some of the really heavy training sometimes. So just knowing that all you have to do is like a couple easy runs throughout the week, and there's only like 2 or 3 days throughout the week that you really want to make sure you get that run in, has always kind of been my format. So if you end up not being able to do one of those easy long runs because something comes, or easy short days because something comes up, it's not going to kill your week or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so the long runs would kind of start at like 10 miles or so and build up to 20 to 23 miles. And those long tempos would kind of start with shorter, like 5 to 10 minute, a couple intervals of 5 to 10 minute tempos, and kind of building into more of like a 30 to 40 minute tempo, and just feeling stronger and trying to get, stronger the longer or the closer you got to marathon time. And then, as you mentioned, like the taper period, and trying to
Yeah.
take your last 2 weeks to just try to feel really good going into it and not take it too easy to where you start feeling like, oh no, I'm losing something. But yeah, just kind of making sure that everything's in order and you're feeling really good those last couple weeks right before it.
Yeah, makes sense. And then what do you do for fueling typically? Do you have a strategy that you work on throughout training that you're like perfecting for race day, or do you have kind of a science dialed in for yourself that you know works? What does fueling typically look
I wish I did have a science dialed in
like?
for my fueling. It's what I had the biggest issue with in my last ultra, my 50K that I just did in October, is I thought I had a pretty cool plan set out for hydration and all that, and it backfired spectacularly. So we can talk about that if you want. But yeah, the biking, side of things, like fueling is so important for like a 4 to 5 hour race in those
Sure.
bike races. So I was pretty used to taking in fuel, like my stomach was used to it, and just like the mental knowing, like, okay, you got to fuel, you got to fuel. But I've always kind of tried to live on the edge of like just taking in enough to where you're not carrying a bunch or you're not having to like feel full or anything like that. And so with running, I've kind of learned that you do just have to kind of go all in with fueling. And my leading up to the marathons, I was trying to like take in a gel or a bar every like 30 to 40 minutes and just make sure you're constantly kind of taking sips of water here and there whenever you get a chance. And it's for me, it's always really hard to stay mindful of that. You kind of get lost in the race a little bit, and then all of a
Yeah.
sudden 30 to 40 minutes have gone by, you're like, crap, I gotta eat something, or your legs start feeling it, you're a little bit, and you're like, shoot, 10 minutes ago I should have been fueling a little bit so that this didn't come on now. So still something, as someone who's been running for 20 years, still something I'm trying to figure out. But there's definitely a lot of cool strategies out there that I like to try and see if they work for me. But yeah, still haven't dialed it in yet.
Yeah, I'm way newer in my running journey than you, but I've even felt like every single race that I've ran, fueling has been a little bit different. So I think it has a there's a lot of factors that play into it, and there's probably not a perfect fueling plan, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like for that 50K that I just ran, my plan was to carry like 2 to 3 gels with me at all time, and each aid station was about like 7 miles apart. So which is kind of a far,
Yeah, it is.
especially in the mountains, that's like that could be a really long time. Seven
Yeah.
miles could take like an hour and a half. So it was really to try and have stuff on me. And my biggest mistake was carrying one water bottle with me at all times that I planned to just refill at each aid station. And it was only like a 250 milliliter soft flask. And most of my training leading up to that, I had gotten away with that because all my runs were, no more than like 3 hours. And so you never really got into that crazy hydration debt that happens when you're pushing a little bit harder for a couple more hours longer than that. And so at mile 17, there was an aid station, and I had an empty flask, got it filled up, and took off right away. I was kind of in a battle neck and neck with a guy. I think we were like battling for fifth or sixth place at that time. So I would like my goal was to like finish in the top five. So I was trying to,
Chasing him.
get in and out of the aid station as quick as
Yeah.
possible and stay ahead of him. And so I just filled my water bottle really quick and went out, and a mile later I was out of water. I just like I downed it, as soon as I could. And so then I had to trudge about, what was that, like 6 or so miles to the next aid station. The next aid was at 24 and a half miles. And we did some pretty serious climbing in between that. So it was a pretty long period of time between when I ran out of water and when I had a chance to get water again. And so my race really started falling apart there, and had some cramping, and my hamstrings really locked up. And definitely did some power hiking and some walking, and just tried to make sure I could run the downhills at least, so I wasn't losing too much time. But yeah, it blew up in my face big time.
Sure. Yeah, and we were talking a lot about mindset in the beginning. So like what do you say to yourself in those periods when things are not going the way that you plan them to go and you're having to like just kind of pull yourself through? Like what goes through your head in moments like that?
Well, one of the coolest things about distance races that take hours and hours is you're almost always going to have a low point like that. And so just recognizing like this is my low point, it can still turn around from here. It doesn't have to be like the end of my race. And I struggled with that when I first started doing the marathons and ultra marathons, is you like kind of hit that point where you're hitting a wall, you're in the pain cave, as they say, and you're just thinking your race is over. It's really easy to kind of DNF from that point because you feel like you've lost kind of what your goal was. But with these long races, you have time to bounce back. You just got to get the fuel in, let your body kind of get right again. And so when that was happening to me in that 50K, I was just focused on getting to the next aid station. And when you get there, you can regroup, refuel, take some more stuff for you to make sure you make it home fine, the last 6 miles. And so there was that hope that I could still turn it around, and you have a set goal in mind of just getting to the next aid station. And so you kind of forget about the big picture of the race and just like, in this moment, I need to get to this point, and then I can try and recover from there.
Yeah, I haven't done an ultra myself, but it seems like that yeah, I like how you put that there's always going to be a low point, so you can kind of mentally prepare for that. There is going to be something on this race that's going to throw me completely off. Do you think that I mean, I'm kind of trying to piece together the differences between ultras and road races. Do you think that is unique to running an ultra, like having those moments where you really have to pull yourself out?
I think so, because the marathon, I think you can just have a really good day and just get through the, like for me, it's like in that 2.5 to 3 hour range of like a really hard effort without like really having anything go catastrophic. Like you're gonna hurt, but you can push through it, because there's only so much longer to go when you really start to hurt in those kind of races. Whereas like the ultra running, where a 50K is gonna take you like 5 hours, there's a lot more time, and a lot more that's gonna go wrong, especially in mountain races. Like I was going in to this last 50K expecting it to be a really hard course, and it was so much harder than I even imagined. Just tons of steep, rooty, uphill stuff that you're just power hiking up. And so when that kind of hits you, and it's like, whoa, this is more than I even signed up for, you just know that getting to the finish is the ultimate goal, and that you have to kind of brainstorm on the fly and adjust your strategy a little bit when that kind of stuff happens. And I think that's kind of the coolest part about those ultra running races, is that it's way more about, you obviously want to be really prepared and pace yourself, how you think your pace should be and all that kind of stuff. But really, it's just about being prepared to adjust, and knowing that, like you said, something is going to go wrong. It's not going to be a perfect day. It's almost impossible for a race like that for it to go 100% how you planned it to. So you just got to be prepared for being unprepared and like having a way to work out of the challenges.
Yeah, normally I ask questions about kind of what advice you have for first marathons, but since we're talking about ultras, I'm curious, like if you could offer advice to somebody who's thinking about running in their first ultra, what would be your advice to jump into that world?
I would say, probably to look at it as a mental challenge more than anything, obviously, and don't, if you can, don't think about the distance. Think about it more as like a time challenge of like, I'm going to be going for a long effort for, anywhere from 5 to 24, 30 hours, depending on if you're like getting into those 100 milers, which I don't know if I'll ever do a 100 miler, but just knowing that it's really about because the pace, there's not like, you're not running fast in an ultra marathon. Even like the really fast guys are still running at like what would probably be like their normal long run pace or something. So you're not like, you're not worried about trying to hit splits or anything like that. It's like trying to keep the momentum going and keeping yourself fueled. And so really, I guess the best advice I could give is like, think of yourself as a car, and like, you need to keep yourself fueled and keep yourself running, and kind of having that mindset of like, we need to be able to make this journey that's going to take us all day, and we need to make sure that we're like fueling for it, and we keep the engine running is kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, for sure. Yeah. And I'm curious about recovery too. What is recovery like for an ultra marathon versus a marathon? Because I know marathon on being on the roads maybe a little bit more impact, but obviously an ultra is a lot more time on your feet. So what's the recovery difference?
No, I think it's interesting because I always feel fresher after an ultra marathon than a marathon. Yeah. There's like the immediate day or so after an ultra, like you're exhausted, your legs hurt, but a couple of days after, you're feeling good, like I can go do a run again. Whereas like the marathon, I felt like my legs were just destroyed because you're trying to run fast for a long period of time. And like you said, the impact on the road. So I feel like you just get more beat up in a marathon than you do an ultra even. And so like for the marathon, I would take like 2 weeks off with like maybe do some like bike riding in between to kind of like loosen up the legs a little bit, but really just let my body get fully healed again. Whereas like with ultra marathons, I feel like you're just trying to, you know, recover a little bit, and then you're kind of ready to go again.
Yeah. How much time? Well, you've ran two ultra marathons, is that right?
Three now.
Oh, three now. Yeah, the most recent one.
October. Yeah, October was my most recent one.
That's right.
But yeah, when I first decided to do an ultra, I kind of jumped up to the 50-mile distance right away.
Yeah.
And there's a 50-miler on Mary's Peak, which is like the highest point in the coastal range of Oregon, and we run up that huge mountain twice, and then kind of do a loop kind of around the area. I can't remember the exact vertical gain, but I think it was, you know, somewhere in that like 9,000 feet total. Jeez. For 50 miles.
Yeah, brutal.
So it was a brutal race to just decide to do for my first ultra. But it was, I would say it was my most memorable race, hands down, because it was actually during COVID, so the start was kind of weird. We started like you were starting like a bike time trial almost, where they send each person out individually, like every 30 seconds or so, and so it didn't start in a big group where you're kind of running with a bunch of people to start. It was immediately kind of in that I'm doing this alone. I've got to get my head right and just find my rhythm. And so I think with any ultra marathon, you kind of start faster than you probably should, just because you feel so good. And no matter what, after like 20 to 30 miles of running on trails, like you're going to slow down. So I think that's from what I've heard of other podcasts I listen to with like other really good ultra marathoners, just start at a pace that you want to start. Like, you don't have to hold yourself back as much, because you're always going to hit that point where you're just dead. So you're not really saving anything by like starting super slow and holding yourself back too much. So I started at what I thought was going to be a pretty good pace for the whole 50 miles. And eventually we kind of, like a few of us kind of got into a group together, and we're kind of going back and forth. And when you're climbing mountains that take like an hour to get to the top of the mountain, you kind of seesaw back and forth. You have like your moments where you feel the best going up, and then moments where other guys will feel it, and you're kind of going back and forth, and moments where you're power hiking a little bit, where they might be trying to run it and you decide like, I'm faster hiking right here, trying to save a little bit of energy. And in that race, the first 20 miles, you basically ascended the Mary's Peak twice. And so you already got a majority of the vertical gain, like in the first half of the race. And that's when I hit probably the lowest point I've ever experienced in a race. It was maybe like mile 23 or something, and I was having to walk downhill. I was just destroyed, and not to not even be halfway and to like feel that bad, it's like, oh no, this is, what am I gonna do here? And that's where it really, like, it started looking really grim. I had moments where I was like on the verge of tears, just like, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Even if I want to quit, I got to walk like 7 miles to the next spot where I can meet someone and drop out.
Right. Yeah.
So it was a very overwhelming experience to like be feeling that. And but like I said earlier, you bounce back, and I walked for a while downhill, you know, got passed by some people, started feeling like, why did I even do this? And then had some food, drank some water, and felt like I could run again. So I started running, and then from there on, like the last 20 miles was really just battling between like the desire to want to be able to run and convincing my legs that we could run. And there was just back and forth, kind of debating with myself and trying to convince myself that it was, you can run here, or just keep walking fast and you're not losing too much time or anything like that. And somehow, you know, made it to the finish and had a really good day. Actually, I finished third in that race.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
For your first one. That's amazing.
So it ended up working out, but it was coming from that, only having run marathons before that, you feel like if you're walking, you're out of it. Like, you don't stand a chance. And then to like come into ultra marathons where it's just kind of, it's part of the game. You really are going to have those moments, and you hope that they can kind of come planned and at meaning or good moments, as opposed to just trying to hang on. But eventually you're gonna hit those moments where you just gotta convince yourself to keep going.
For sure. Yeah. And when you cross the finish line after a race like that, like, you just went through hell for hours and hours and hours especially for your first one, like, coming out of a race like that, what does that mean to you? How does that change you as a person, or how does that impact you mentally?
It really opened my eyes to how much you can put yourself through, and that if you want to do something super meaningful to you, like, it's going to hurt, it's going to really suck at times, but if you just keep pushing and just keep trying to talk yourself through it and convince yourself that you're going to make it, you'll get there. And so that is something that really, I feel like everyone that's a runner is going to eventually have that moment where they feel that you can push through anything you put your mind to. And that's just such a valuable thing to have in life and be able to take into anything, whether it's like a career path or, you know, starting a family or anything. Like, there's going to be those moments where it's really hard and you're like, what the heck did I just get myself into, and is this worth it? And just knowing that you've pushed yourself through those moments before, that you can get to the good point.
Yeah, Yeah, those moments are where change happens. The change doesn't happen when you're feeling awesome. The change happens
No.
when you're feeling crummy and you're having to push through. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, awesome. Well, that was great walking through that. I think that there was a lot of advice kind of throughout your different marathon stories. So I appreciate you walking through a couple of those races for us. And how I like to kind of close out the show is just with a couple questions. And then I actually have a question from somebody on my social media that I'm going to ask you as well, if you're okay
Okay.
answering a random
Yeah.
question.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So questions start with fuel. I know we talked about it a little bit, but curious what your favorite fuel options have been over the years. What's worked for you? What hasn't worked for you? What does fuel kind of look like?
In cycling, it was always just the standard Clif Bar, easily accessible. You can find them anywhere. And when you're riding, it's a little bit easier to chew. And so, like, I never had problems eating Clif Bars on the bike or anything like that. But once I got into the marathons and the ultra marathons again, and fueling was still an important part, just felt like I couldn't do the Clif Bars anymore. It was too hard. When you're exhausted, it's really hard to chew or get the food down at least quick enough to where it's being beneficial to you. I would find myself like holding on to a Clif Bar for like an hour on my run, and it's like, well, I should have got this down in like 5 minutes, and now I should have had like three Clif Bars by now, and I'm still on the first one. So that's when I decided to really get into the gels. And I really like the sport, what is it, Science and Sport Gel, the SIS company. Those ones, I feel like they taste good enough and they go down easy, and there's a lot of gel to them in the packets, so you feel like you're intaking a lot. And that's kind of where I've stayed through all of my ultra and marathoning is gels and the occasional like the Stroop waffles. I really like those because
Yeah, I
those
like
are a
those
little bit
too.
easier to chew. But yeah, stuff that you can just put down fast, I felt like has been the most important part. Once I really started thinking about fueling with running, because you really just need to get it over with.
Yeah, it's a necessity.
Yeah.
Cool. Sweet. And then shoes. What have you liked for shoes? I'm sure your shoe options are different for trail running versus road running. So maybe you could talk
Yeah.
about both of them.
Sure. Well, for road running, like in those marathon days, it was like the early part of the super shoes. I think I still have the first version of the Vaporflies
Oh,
sitting in my closet. And those are what I ran in. And those I feel like didn't really, looking back on it now, didn't really fit my stride very well. Now there's so many varieties and you can kind of pinpoint the one that works best for you. But I definitely feel like the super shoes are, a game changer in the marathon world. If you're running at anything over like an 8 minute mile, like you're going to get some benefit from them. And like even for some people, like if your gait is right with the shoe, like it's going to help you. And so I feel like that's, I don't know what works for me now. I haven't dabbled in the super shoes as much since I've been doing more ultra stuff, but those were always my big thing. And I always trained in Mizunos. I really love the Mizunos on the road. The Wave Rider series was kind of my go-to all through high school, college, and post-college running. And then once I kind of got into trail, the easy brand to kind of get drawn toward was Hoka, just because they're so big in the trail running community. So I've been running with a lot of Hoka stuff recently. I really like the Challenger for kind of mixed runs like road and trail, and then really love the Speed Goat for most of my trail runnings. And I think I did that 50 miler in the Torrents, which is kind of like a lower profile trail shoe. And these days I probably wouldn't mess with that as much because I'm a little more injury prone getting older now. I'm not quite as durable, and so I try and make sure I've got a lot of cushioning, and I really like the Speed Goats. That's kind of my go-to right now.
Cool. I love it. I could talk about shoes all day, but we'll leave it at that. And then my question for you from our follower here. This one comes from @runsmilesraces on Instagram. Thank you for sending us a question. She's wondering, or he's wondering, how does tapering for a marathon look like for you?
Great. So I'd say about 2.5 weeks out is when I wanted to do like my longest run. So like for that Portland and the Eugene marathons, I tried to hit like I think it was 22 and 23 mile runs as like kind of my long run, before that. And then from there, long runs were kind of out the window. I felt like I built a big enough base for those really long efforts. And so then, later on in the week after that final long run, I would do like one more hard tempo effort, and kind of dialing in on that race pace that my goal race pace that I wanted, and trying to make that feel as comfortable as possible. And then your mileage really starting to go down. Like, I was never a big mileage runner. I think my max was probably like 60 going into my marathons, but I would probably go from 60 those 2 weeks out, and then kind of 40, and then like 30 going into race week. So I would like drop off quite a bit and just really make sure you're running, but not doing anything where you felt like you were going to have to recover a long time from it. So like the workouts backed off a little bit, the intensity backed off, and you got more to like race pace for 40 minutes, which if you're planning to run it for a full marathon, like 40 minutes is not, that shouldn't be too hard. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of doing a lot of strides and stuff after my easy runs and stuff that really made you feel sharp and fast and ready to go.
Cool. Love it. All right, sweet. Well, last question for you is just what's coming up next for you. I know you're just coming off this race, so I don't know if you've even thought about what's next or if you have something on the books, but are you thinking about training for anything else for the time being?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do more 50Ks, kind of in, I'd like to do one kind of maybe early winter, like something in like the January, February timeframe. I haven't pinpointed one necessarily. And then one kind of in the spring and kind of see where I go from there. If I want to jump back up to those like 50, 100K type races. But I really like the 50K after doing one. It feels like it's long, but it's still kind of, it feels like a race still.
Yeah.
Like with those really long ultras, it kind of just feels more like a trek,
yeah,
and you're trying to like survive. Whereas like the 50K, there's still like, it feels like there's that element of racing a little bit more, which is, well, like I said, kind of how I got into running in the first place. It's always kind of been my drive, is to be competitive and feel like I'm in the race. And so I think I want to kind of do some more 50Ks and really kind of put it all together as much as possible through a 50K and see what I'm capable of in that. So like right now, my training is kind of just staying fit enough to where running feels kind of effortless.
Yeah.
Cause I have listened to a few of your podcasts, and one of them I listened to recently, the guy was saying that like running became fun when you finally got through that first part, where it just sucks.
Yeah. And, there's always,
yeah, it sucks
that
for everyone.
Yeah.
But once it starts feeling like fun and like you can really flow and, it feels effortless. So I'm trying to like just stay at that level right now and, kind of pinpoint a race like two months out or so and be able to build from there. It's kind of how I've been approaching my training the last couple of years, is just have that good baseline and then pick something far enough out to where you can build into it. And I hope to just kind of do that through the winter and the spring and see what happens.
Sweet. Yeah, so I love it. I love having kind of open-ended goals. It's so exciting because you've got races that you can start researching and then you can put the plan together, and it's all very exciting every single time.
And especially when, you just are living life and you've got a full-time job, and we've got three dogs, so there's always something going on with them. And I just got married over the summer, so
Oh, congrats.
thank you. So that was, that I had to take some time off just like preparing for that. And so now it's just kind of, just I like being in shape and ready to tackle a race when it feels right.
For sure. Cool. Well, if you're comfortable sharing, if anybody wants to kind of follow along with you, if you do any posting or anything like that about your journey, where can they find you?
On Instagram, I'm Dog Cog Stew. So it's underscored, I believe, like dog underscore cog underscore stew. And so I occasionally post like the races that I've done and stuff like that, and all my dogs. So if you love dog pictures, like
Who doesn't?
find that. And that's probably the main place you'd see anything.
Okay, sweet. I will link it below too so everybody can find you easily on there. But again, I
Awesome.
really appreciate you running through your running journey here. I think it's been awesome. And there's been a lot of tips and tricks throughout. So appreciate you going through it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying my first marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @myfirstmarathonpod. See you on the next one.